Life, culture, and current events from a biblical perspective. 2020 on Vision.
As we do on a Thursday, good to touch base with Family Voice Australia, the National Director of Family Voices, Charles Newington. Charles is joining us. Hello, Charles. Welcome back.
Thank you, Neil. Good to be back.
Well, what a week it has been in the Parliament. And for those who have not been following the news, there's significant things that affect everything when it comes to our ability as Christians to be able to teach what we believe the Bible teaches. Significant week in the Parliament, all around the Sex Discrimination Act. What are your thoughts for what has developed, Charles?
Yes, well, it's been very thick and fast, and I sympathise with people who feel like it's been hard to track and keep track of. It has been hard to track, and the basic thing has been that the Sex Discrimination Act has certain exemptions that cover religious bodies and educational institutions established for religious purposes as well. And the intent, while it doesn't specifically mention schools, it actually assumes and implies that schools, religious schools, are set up for a religious purpose, not just an educational purpose. And that's how come this is focusing upon schools as much as it is. And I think that's a very interesting point, you know, that that from a Christian perspective, and no doubt from an Islamic perspective or a Jewish perspective, education is not just merely a matter of what we might call secular education, educating people for the work environment, but it's educating them for life. And that education implies moral education and a spiritual education. So you can see that our early legislation kind of respected that and valued it, and now that societal values are changing, we're wanting to remove exemptions that people now feel are out of step with the zeitgeist of the nation in its desire for a new kind of sexual orientation and liberty to express one's sexual identity.
Charles, it is the case, isn't it, that when we think of Christian schools, some people are thinking this is separated from the church, but really Christian schools are an extension of the teaching of the church.
Exactly.
So if there's a limitation on the schools, there's a limitation on the church.
Very much so. Very much so. These schools are set up exactly like that. And sometimes we can see it more clearly when we see the schools that are recognised as Anglican schools or Catholic schools, where the name is actually the denominational name is actually in the school. But so this kind of generic term, Christian schools, that covers lots of other kind of generally evangelical kind of schools. These schools are very much the expression of local churches or denominations, and they are for religious purpose. They are, as I say, you know, the religion doesn't just cover what we do in the building, but it covers how we approach science and how we approach the arts and how we approach you know, our engagement in the world, and that is the nature of religion. And this is part of the big debate that's been going on, that that some people don't want to concede that religion is that holistic, that it influences everything. They want to kind of confine it to the private space of the home and the church hall.
Well, Charles, the Centre Alliance senators have stalled the process, and it looks like it won't be now debated again until the new year. And you never know what might change with that today, but it looks as though that's the case. There is a little bit of a reprieve here, but what are your thoughts for people understanding the significance of what happened this week, being prepared for how they might be an influence and to get word out? Because there seems to be a significant ignorance amongst even Christian people as to the value of what it is to be able to teach what you believe in a Christian school context. What are your thoughts for what people ought to be preparing for now into the new year?
Well, you know, the general consensus is, and you could see that, you know, the Archbishop of Sydney, the Anglican Archbishop of Sydney, Glenn Davis, and a number of others, they wrote to an open letter to the Parliament, to the Prime Minister and the Leader of the Opposition and members of Parliament, to to express their concern that what the Labor Party was seeking to do was it was seeking to remove these exemptions or protections that allowed religious schools and colleges and training institutions of all kinds to teach within the religious framework and values that were important. Now, if they would not have written that if they hadn't had strong and clear legal advice that that is what could have happened if that Labour proposed bill went through. Now, I think that we need to see that we are dealing with a major shift in the culture, an attempt to limit the freedoms of not just the church, of course, but all religious bodies, to limit the freedoms and to impose the state over religious bodies, in fact telling them what they can and they can't teach. And that's always been a very sensitive issue, you know, for hundreds of years. That's that church-state divide, and that the church-state divide was set up to protect the churches from the state, and not the other way around. Although, of course, the relationship's not always been healthy, and we see that in a religion like Islam, for instance, they don't recognise that separation, and that Islam is over the state. Christians don't feel that. We recognise that we need to maintain the independence of the state within a democratic frame of reference. So this will affect everybody. There's no doubt about it. It will affect everybody. And we just need to pray and need to work to make sure that we get a kind of a balanced outcome as for the nation, because this affects, you know, there's over a million children in Christian schools or faith-related schools. We're not talking small numbers here. And there's thousands and thousands of people obviously training for ministry and in religious colleges, tertiary colleges, etc., that are being affected by this. So it's not a small issue. It affects, you know, a large proportion of Australian society.
Charles, the momentum seems to be against the church, as you describe, cultural change. But this is not something that is inevitable. And I imagine that when the church is pushed into the corner, that either it'll just be swamped by this tsunami that is rising, or perhaps there might be some with a little bit of courage to stand up and fight for what is truth and what is right, and for the freedom, as we say, not just of religious freedom, but for all Australians. I mean, this is the freedom of all Australians under attack here. There's this idea of being swamped and the culture against us and the momentum's not on our side. How do you see all of that? Or is that not really a relevant assessment?
Well, it is a relevant assessment. You know, it's certainly the momentum in what we might call the public square commentary, you know, in the media, things like, you can see very selective commentary that always seems to frame Christians in particular as reactionary, as historically irrelevant now, that sort of thing. And but actually, I think that what it's doing is it's making Christians think very hard again about our engagement in society. And one of the challenges here is to realize that while it seems that they're going after Christians, or that some people are going after Christians and Christian freedoms, we have to kind of just stop for a minute and recognize that that it's not just about our freedoms. It's about everybody's freedoms. And that what we are being asked to do here is to defend freedom. We are being asked to defend freedom of speech for all people, freedom of religion for all people, freedom of conscience for all people. We can't just defend it for ourselves. And this is difficult for us, because we think to ourselves, I don't know whether I want to defend the religious freedoms of, say, a Muslim or whatever. But in a society like ours, we must recognize that they have as much right to practice their faith, you know, within the normal reasonable considerations of law that we are subject to as well. That this is the challenge for us, that this is about freedom. It's not just about religion. The church has not got a very good history on this in some ways, because so much of the history of religious freedoms has in fact been the dissenting voices within the church sort of saying, give us the right to believe what we've believed that the Christian scriptures are saying, or something like that, against, say, the, you know, the monolith of Roman Catholicism, or that relationship that used to exist between the church and state that made it difficult for minorities, Christian minorities. And actually, that was the framework, that was the cultural background against which this legislation was being formed and framed. Now the world has changed, and in a country like Australia, we have so many other religious minorities and ideological minorities represented, and it complicates the task of protecting freedoms now, because we've got to go through this very complex business of balancing rights. And the challenge is that, you know, if you've been used to being the majority and you've had control, or you've been able to exercise your rights at the expense of other people, when that gets rebalanced, you know, rights are actually a finite commodity, and some people lose some rights in order that others might get them. And this is a challenge. There's a thing called the Syracuse principle in the management of law that says, if in this process of rebalancing rights, do it in a way that has as least possible impact upon the balance of rights as possible. In other words, don't just you know, impose discriminatory laws in a very rough and heavy-handed manner, but keep the balance. Try to keep society balanced so that everybody feels like they're getting a fair share of freedom.
As you say, it is sophisticated, it is complicated, but if we were boiling this down to a simple idea, a simple principle here, Charles, if you don't have religious freedom, what you do have is rising authoritarianism. And as soon as we lose the religious freedom to be able to teach what you believe, then if that comes under the authority of the state, then you have what is very, very simply a rising authoritarianism. And of course, then where that might lead is up to your imagination. What are your thoughts for just this such significant importance, the value of actually maintaining the church's right to be able to teach what it believes?
Well, I think that the church needs to realise that it's the custodian of not just its own religious interests. It's the custodian of a view of government. And that view of government is that the purpose of government is to maximise the freedoms and just rights of its citizens. That's the purpose, to maximise it, not to control it. And this is part of the challenge that we see in our society, where we rush to legislate. Before we know where we are, we've got laws and rules and regulations about every possible thing that you can imagine, when actually the purpose of government is to keep legislation to a minimum and to recognize that legislation cannot do everything. And this is the role of the church, that there are some things legislation can't do. We sometimes hear that word, don't we? You cannot legislate righteousness. It's the role of the church to be leaven, positive influence, light and salt in society, so that social values are shaped and influenced and directed by a sense of the common good and a sense of all that is good and right and true. And the church has a vital role now to realize that if we're going to save the nation from becoming subject to totalitarianism, it's not just about politics, it's about the actual work and influence of the church in society. And every Christian is now a missionary. Every Christian is now has a responsibility, not just to promote Christianity, but to promote all that is good and right and best for the society in which we live. And frankly, you know, the line, but that's what faith does. It sweetens everything. You know, true faith sweetens everything. We see this in the arts, don't we? That when Christian influence is withdrawn from the arts go very dark. And they lose their sort of edification quality. You know, they become almost terrifying rather than edifying. And so we're not just called to engage in the political debate, but we're called to engage in society and not abandon society to others who don't have this vision glorious. You know, we have a vision glorious, don't we? We have so much hope for society when society is under the benign influence of Christ and the Word of Truth. And so that's my comment on that. It's a bit wordy.
Well, Charles, a little wordy, but I must say, and for listeners who perhaps didn't get everything you said there, what you were speaking were absolute gems of wisdom. And for us to think of the church as the custodian of the view of government, of the sweetness of a society, is just a beautiful thought. And to lose that would be tragic. And as you say, the forces that are mounted against it, I suspect, Charles, that there are some who are even within the Christian community who are seeing the church not as that custodian, not as the sweetener for society, but somehow rather as a little marginalised group off on the side. We need to perhaps get an idea that our church experience is somewhat different to the marginalised little group that meets on a Sunday, but is bigger than that.
I agree with you, and I think that so much of that is the psychology of the fragmentation and the dissenting in the church, the way in which the church is sort of fractured off, so that you get denomination after denomination that feels the need to defend its particularity, its particular doctrine or position or something like that, and before we know where we are, we become defensive. When that's not the nature of the church. The nature of the church is that, I love that old hymn. This is my Father's world. This world is loved by God, and in spite of its diversity, in spite of its religious diversity, in spite of its unrighteousness, God is able to see through that to the value of every human being, and he calls his sons and daughters to be generous and big-spirited as well, and to see that we're not here for our own interests, but we are here for the interests of all humanity. And that is so important. I hope that's one of the lessons that comes out of this conflict, and that it would be tragic if this conflict characterized the church as once again defending its own interests, its own little patch, because that's one of the criticisms against the church, that's what we've done. We've only ever defended our own interests, and we've forgotten about everybody else, and that's just not Christianity. It's just not our mission in the world. I love that phrase. It says, the church is perhaps the only organization in the world that exists for its non-members.
Well, Charles, you have reminded us today that there are bigger dimensions at play than just what's happening in the politics and the argument that's going on in our parliament. I want to thank you so much for those insights. We have run out of time. There were other issues we were going to discuss. We'll have to put them on hold. But let me point people to the website, Family Voice Australia. You might like to connect with Charles Newington, familyvoice.org.au. That's familyvoice.org.au. Charles Newington, thanks so much for taking some time to share these gems with us today on 2020.
Thank you, Neil.
Before you go, thanks for listening.
There's lots more great audio on demand, or you can listen to us live at visionradio.org.au.
And remember, Vision is listener supported. Your donation,
large or small,
will help us continue connecting faith to life for hundreds of thousands of people across Australia and around the world.
Learn more or donate today at visionradio.org.au.